Are you working on your author career but struggling to get that first book published? Does the goal of being an author seem too lofty? Or are thoughts of having multiple books and making a full-time living are as fantastical as living in Cinderella's castle? Welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where aspiring authors can be heard. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have gotten their foot on the author career path. Hear what they've done to get there and where they want to go now. Settle back. It's time for a bit of inspiration and advice. Come listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
All right, before we get to the second half of the interview with Jimmy, where he talks about his philosophy with writing, and we talk about a few things that really kind of blew my mind. It's a great talk, one that's very memorable for me. But before we do that, I have a little shout out from the people at Kobo Writing Life and authors. If you don't have your books in Kobo Writing Life, you should check into it. This would be one of the places to go to if you're going wide. If you go back to episode 48, I talked to Tara from Kobo, who talks a little bit about all the advantages that they offer writers. And in this little shout out, we have Rachel and Joni. So listen to this and then listen to the rest of the interview with Jimmy. Take it away.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Joni.
And we're from Kobo Writing Life, Kobo's free, fast, and easy self-publishing platform. KWL was built by authors for authors, and our team of dedicated book lovers is always working hard to help authors reach new readers around the world.
With Kobo Writing Life, authors can now publish audiobooks and ebooks right in their KWL account. We don't ask for exclusivity, and you'll always control your pricing in up to 16 currencies. You can also create a pre-order for your audiobooks or ebooks with no date limitations.
We have a lot of great opportunities for indie authors, including the option to include your books in our Kobo Plus subscription catalog in selected regions, as well as great promotional opportunities available in the Promotions tab right in your KWL dashboard.
If you're a KWL author and you don't yet have access to the Promotions tab or the Audiobook tab, email us at writinglife@kobo.com and we'll get you sorted. We're all about providing excellent support.
Create your free account today at kobo.com/writinglife. If you want to learn more about Kobo Writing Life, check out our blog, podcast, and find us on socials.
All right, so let's talk some author stuff. So obviously, we mentioned when we were talking about your books, you've learned a lot from when you were 10 years old and couldn't get past 30 pages to now you've got a book out, several books out. So what are some of the biggest things you've learned that you're doing now that you didn't do when you first started 10 or more years ago?
I think that practice is really important. And I think I was maybe mentioning in our mastermind group the other day, Stephen, that I wish that when I started writing, I had approached it more like I did music. Because when I was writing songs, I never really aspired to be a great guitarist. I just wanted to be a good enough guitarist so that I could play the songs that I heard in my mind. And a lot of times I would hear songs in my mind that I didn't have the technical, you know, ability for on the guitar. So I would have to practice guitar. So it was a means to an end and a discipline. And I wish that I had approached writing in a similar way 10 years ago to just write scene after scene, because I need to be able to have the chops to write those stories that I see bloom in my mind. And so I'm doing that more now, but it would have been nice to have been doing that a lot earlier.
Okay, you got to learn. We all have to start somewhere. And I think we all start at different spots, different places in our writing. When you're writing, what software and services do you use?
Scrivener is indispensable for me. I actually use Scrivener for everything. I even use it for invoices for work, and because it's just so easy for me to use. And I use it for journaling every morning. So Scrivener is the most important. And then besides that, let's see, what else? I haven't formatted a book in a little while. I think that I want to get a Mac just for the purpose of using Vellum next time. I've never used it, but I think I'm going to do that for the next manuscript.
And arguably, we both use the Mastermind to not only keep us motivated, but accountable for our writing, and to learn new things off of other writers. I think that's a tool a lot of people overlook sometimes.
Yeah, the mastermind is huge. That's another thing to answer your previous question. What would you do? All right, if I were to, the thing that I'm doing right now differently than I did 10 years ago is interacting with the community of writers. I had tried to in the past. I had joined writers groups in Portland and whatnot, but it just never really took. But yeah, using Slack, like you're saying, which Slack is a great piece of software for keeping in touch with the community, like a topic-based community. And so using Slack to stay in touch with people, that's been really powerful. And then the mastermind, which is attached to Slack also, has been really good.
Yeah, agreed. Very much. So there's our shout out. Everybody listening, go check out Jay Thorne's The Author Success Mastermind.
Definitely.
All right. So I always ask authors, let's think of a topic to discuss, something that has affected you that other authors may be interested in. And we've already talked about you as a musician and losing your hearing and how that affected your writing and how those intertwined. But then you throw this email at me and you say, oh, here's a topic. How about how I overcame stuttering and how it has affected and why we make art? And I'm like, wait a second. Jimmy used to stutter? I don't believe it because I cannot detect any of that. So tell us a little bit more about that, what you grew up with.
Yeah, this came to mind when you were asking to think of something else to talk about. And I think for me, it has everything to do with writing. And let's see if I can convey how that is. So I had a stutter for probably from the age of 4 onward through my early childhood. And I also had acute asthma. And I also had incredibly bad hay fever. And I also couldn't say my R's. So I was a mess and nobody could understand what I was saying. And I'm sure as a 6-year-old in first grade, it might have looked cute, but it was intensely frustrating. And that frustration grew year after year because I felt like trapped within my own head and resigned to never being able to be understood. And of course, the more emotional or important the thing was that I was trying to say, the more I would stutter. Because that's usually how it works for people. And it, as time went on, as I got to be 9, 10 years old, it got a little bit better. Like it wasn't as acute, the stutter. But at the same time, my self-consciousness was increasing, as it does for everybody around that age. It was just really embarrassing and frustrating. And then when I was about, I might have been 11 years old, 10 or 11, one day I was walking around the house and I was singing a song to myself. Nobody was around. And I think this song was probably like a Dead Milkman song or something like that. And so I was singing this song, walking around, and then it struck me suddenly, I'm not stuttering. And then I thought, yeah, of course, I never stutter when I'm singing a song. But then I stopped and I sat down and I thought, so why do I not stutter when I'm singing a song with words? But I do stutter if I'm trying to explain something to somebody else, you know? And so I thought about this some more and then I tried singing another song. And again, I didn't stutter. And so I thought, okay, so what's different about singing a song? Is it the music? Is it the singing? And so then I thought a sentence similar to the way maybe I would think of a song or see a song in my head. And so I thought about a sentence that, just a simple sentence, like the cat walked across the road. And I would see the words in my mind as if I were reading it. And then I spoke it, the cat walks across the road, and I didn't stutter. And I would read a book out loud. I didn't stutter when I was reading books. So it was something about trying to express an idea from scratch that was making me stutter. So I started experimenting. If somebody asked me something, instead of just responding, shooting from the hip, I would first write the sentence in my mind and see it. And then I would read the sentence to them and I would not stutter. And so I started doing this more and more with longer and longer sentences. I started getting better at it until I eventually formed a habit of writing the sentence in my head first and seeing it and then reading it. And this got easier and easier until now I'm barely conscious of it. But I think that it did affect my development after that. And so I don't know what other people experience when they're talking like this. I tend to see the words in my mind. And I think that probably that's why I still don't stutter. It was like a fix. It was like a patch. But what I saw that was happening back then, it was like there was a mismatch in speed. I saw concepts, feelings, experiences in my head, there was a fervor to them. They were really fast. And when I would try to speak them out loud, it couldn't come out. It wasn't synchronized with my mouth. And so I had learned that in order to articulate the things that are happening in my head, I have to slow those thoughts down. And it's almost water vapor floating in the air at a very high vibrational rate. You have to slow that rate down, cool it down until there's a state change and it condenses to water, to something that you can see. And that's how I learned to do it. All of those crazy thoughts and fast thoughts and feelings in my head, I had to slow them down and condense them until they turned into something visible. They had to incarnate into the material world, slow way down, and then they would be turned into words. But at the same time, I saw how those words were not perfect. It was enough for me to approximately communicate what I was thinking or feeling to another person. But it wasn't the actual concept, the actual feeling or experience. And so I had to accept that if I was going to speak clearly in a way that other people could understand, it was going to have to be an approximation of what I was feeling, not the exact thing. And whatever, that worked. But over the years, I saw how this was actually, I think it was actually important and had to do with why I want to do songwriting, you know, that irreducible impulse I spoke about reflecting my experience of the world. There was this desire to actually communicate the thing that I'm really experiencing that words aren't adequate for. And I think that's what it has to do with writing and with art, which is we believe in words. For example, you have a word and that's represents a concept. Then you have another word and it's a little bit different meaning and it represents a little bit different concept. And so that's how we have nuance in our vocabulary. And we can believe that interval, like a musical note to another musical note, the interval between those two slightly different words, we can believe that's a natural interval. But I don't think that it is. I think that there's a lot of sound, a lot of tones in between A and A sharp. There is also a lot of concepts and experiences between two words. And that, in fact, I think that most of our concepts that go through our heads, our feelings, our experiences, actually aren't represented by the words we have, and that actually exist within the interstices of our vocabulary. We learn to just stop seeing it. But I think that through artistic mediums, through painting, for example, that's a way of creating something that you don't have words to express, but people can look at it and they can, they're able to grasp the thing that the artist was trying to say that there weren't words for. And it's actually another language, one that maybe is much more adequate to express what people are thinking and feeling. And so I think that's why novels do this also. And it's ironic because novels are words, but through writing tens of thousands of words, you can not explicitly say the thing that you're trying to say, the experience you're trying to convey to the reader, but through tens of thousands of words, They can paint a picture, like a single image. And it's that single image that is a thing that was trying to be communicated. I recently read Crime and Punishment. It's about 100,000 words, I think. And there's something vivid that he communicated to me. And it wasn't really in any sentence. It wasn't any one word. There weren't any words to describe this thing. But the thing is simple and it's real. But it took 100,000 words for him to point to it. And I saw it and I said, okay, yeah, he just successfully painted an image with 100,000 words so that I could understand this thing that he was trying to reflect back onto the universe. Yeah, so I think that's what I've learned about art through overcoming stuttering.
That's pretty deep and amazing. I do love the fact that Jimmy the Cyborg reprogrammed himself. That's pretty cool for me as a tech guy. But I also like how the way you did it, that you pictured, first of all, you're not the only person I've ever heard that stutters but can sing and do music wonderfully. Jim Nabors comes to mind as being one of the more famous examples I could think of. He had a very big stutter, but then he sang like church choir. There's something in our brains. And to me, what it sounds like you did, you found that bridge between the areas. Like everybody else, that bridge already existed. And yes, you found how to form that bridge for yourself. And then it's very interesting that you write it in your head before you're saying it, and you went on to become a writer. So it almost, you were meant to do.
Yeah. There's a lot that could be said there also. I don't know how much time we have. Now, there's something that I think of as, right now I'm calling it the law of virtuous idiocy. And it's where I've noticed this happen with people. If somebody is naturally bad at something, naturally has some sort of difficulty, and throughout childhood or a little bit later even, they were forced to practice like crazy in order to get just as good as everybody else is naturally, they will tend to continue practicing out of habit and eventually become much better than the average person. I saw this happen with a lot of people growing up. And so I think it has to do with that. It has to do with that being forced to establish a discipline of practice and whatever it is. And sometimes you're forced to because you have a natural deficiency.
Interesting. So there's a couple of interesting thoughts. Going back to what you said about painting the picture, I love visualizing a novel as like a whole blank wall, and you have the author with every word, he's painting part of that wall. So when you're done, you have the full picture. So you're not viewing the book as a linear story, but more as a snapshot in time almost of a visual element. Trying to grasp that and wrap my head around it, that's pretty intense. I love that.
Yeah, it's almost like those images that are composites of hundreds of other photos. And then the whole thing, if you stand back, is one image.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And that puts a whole different light on thinking about our words and the writing, that you know, that there's almost a dissonance. If you're writing the words and you're not using your own voice, your own style, not choosing the words that come naturally to you, then that there's a dissonance in the story that's imperceptible from the visual reading of the words, almost a metaphysical harmony with you and the story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we're getting really deep.
And also the Jay Thorne's and Zach Bohannon's three story method actually hints at this, because the three story method as they describe it is fractal, meaning the various levels of the story are self-similar. So you can have the three aspects of a scene, three aspects of a chapter, three aspects of an act, and a three aspects globally, for example. And fractal structures are, that's how nature builds things. It's a very natural, very intuitive way of structuring things. So I think that belongs in this whole conversation.
Yeah, that's, again, the story craft, that book, and thinking of it in a higher level enlightened way. It's almost as if we're aliens visiting and trying to interpret through different senses is what I keep thinking of, some sci-fi story here.
Yeah, life is short and we have a desire to communicate with one another. And we can do that through speaking, through the words that we've inherited, which is amazing. But we all also realize that it's inadequate. And so there are other ways that we are trying to speak to each other, trying to communicate in ways that words won't do justice. And so I think that the novel is a way to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do like how you perceive writing in the same vein as music, because it is creative art. Someone that does a sculpture, what's that old thing? Was it Rodin or somebody that said that he created this sculpture, and they said, it's a beautiful sculpture that you made. He says, I didn't make it. It was always there. I just brought it out. Mm-hmm. And you could think the same way with your music. I've played some music, written some songs, and it's an expression. You're bringing things out. There's more than what the words in the song are. The music itself conveys a certain feeling. And you're giving us a different viewpoint on novels, the reading of it in a more spiritual, creative, musical way almost. And I think that's something I'm going to have to definitely ponder a bit more.
Yeah. I definitely trying to ponder it more and work with it more. And yeah, the possibilities are infinite. You're talking about music. I used to stare at my fretboard. One of my favorite experiences was to sit down, try to write a new song, stare at the fretboard, and just see the literal infinity. Because you have all the fret combination of frets and strings, which that's a lot, but then you add the dimension of time, and it's literally infinite. You can add the dimension of genre on there also. And then just to place my finger and strum it, and okay, now we're collapsing the probability wave now. We are plucking something out of that infinite, you know, universe. And yeah, I feel the same way with writing.
It's, you know, people say all the good music, all the good songs have been done, but there's still new songs that come out that I like, new songs that make me think different. Same with the words and the books. Yeah. We've only got, everybody in music has the same notes, the same chords, the same scales. Mm-hmm. Everybody in writing has the same letters and the same words, but you can make so much different music out of what you bring to what you're doing, to the art, to creativity. If you view the writing as more of a creative art rather than a craft, and I have to get this, let the words sing to you, totally can change how you view what you're writing.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, now absolutely. I've got to do that, Jimmy. You got me saying, wow, I've been doing it wrong.
Awesome.
All right. Hey, this has been a really great, cool talk. I'm glad I finally got you on here. I had to kick your butt a couple times.
Absolutely. Yeah.
To get you on.
No, but it was seriously, it's an honor to be on your show. It was a really fun conversation.
Very much so. We'll have to. Are you going to New Orleans, perchance?
No, I'm not. I thought about it. There were a lot of events to go to, and I had to choose only a couple.
I understand. Next time, Essential Gathering or something, we'll catch up, I'm sure.
For sure.
We'll have a good discussion on this. Before we go, do you have any last-minute advice for new authors?
Life is short. Do what you feel called to do. And that's about it.
There you go. I love that. You can't get any better than that. All right, Jimmy, hey, it's been a really great afternoon talking to you. I will let you go so you can go work on your sauna and your next piece of music or your writing. You got a lot of things a lot of irons in the fire.
That's right. Yeah. One too many, probably. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man. Talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe, sometime in the near future, it might be you.